think this has been a nice conversation that we're having today, because we're really looking at the use of informatics and information technology in local public health from a variety of perspectives. And so Mike's talked about what it's like to walk in and have to start from scratch. And Marcus has talked about, you know, the success that they've had with moving out into the community and generating information exchange. And I'm going to actually take a very different tact today, and I'm going to talk about some of the other ways, once you have informaticians on staff or people that do informatics, what are some of the other ways in which a local health department can use those skills and talents? One of the things that I've observed over the years in working in local public health is that if you're in local public health, doesn't matter what your job title is, you have to learn how to do more than one thing. You know, and so part of what I look at is what's unique about your informatics people and how can you better use them. One of the things about your informatics people is that they have to know something about everything that's being done in the health department, because they're supporting the information needs of your entire department. So you have an area in which you've got people who know what your environmental health specialists are doing, at least to the degree that they're supporting that. Your animal control people, your nurses, your dietitians, they're working with those staff as they're doing their roles. And so you have a very rich source of, you know, a small group of people who know something about everything that's going on in the department and who know to some extent the people that are working in all those programs within the department. So if you've got experienced people who have an informatics background, who have learned public health in your arena, they also present you with a unique combination of both their public health knowledge, their knowledge about the department, and some informatics skills that you can use in some other ways. And I'm going to talk a little bit about two examples of ways in which we've tried to apply some of those additional skills. I'm just starting with some general kinds of things. For us, the role of health information technology in knowledge management is, how do we support evidence-based approach to public health? So how do we take all the information that's coming in, and how do we assist the staff to make use of that to inform their decisions about interventions, about program planning, about everything else? And also, since I am also the financial person in the department, one of the things I have to do on a regular basis, I would have said a year ago an annual basis, now I'd say a monthly basis, we have to be able to justify what we're doing, how we're using the resources, why we're making the choices that we're making, and how to tie those back to health outcomes. As I see it, the role of our informatics group is helping to create that bridge. The bridge between all the data that you're collecting, all the work that the staff are doing, enabling them to take that information and use it for program planning, development, evaluation, designing interventions. This is just a very brief, these are kind of the informatics things that our information management people are supporting right now. And we are somewhere in the middle of where Mike and Marcus are when it comes to health information exchange. And we are probably somewhere in the middle of all of these. When we looked at doing a strategic plan, our strategic directions and objectives had to do with assuring availability of resources, assuring ability to analyze and interpret data, provide information, help people learn how to use the tools that they have, and how to integrate information from all those different sources. And so we developed strategic plans around that. The first example I'm going to talk about is taking all those informatics skills and all the information that we had and applying it to a thorny problem. I you know, come up with lots of analogies about how to describe this, but the one that occurred to me the most recently is if you've ever done crocheting or knitting or had somebody that's done it and they've piled their yarn into a bag and haven't picked it up for a couple of years, and they pick it up and there's this mess of tangled yarn in the middle, and you have to try to pull it apart and roll it back up on the ball so that you can use it. Most departments will have a program that you've had for 20 or 30 years, and every time you've encountered a difficult situation, the staff have strategized and they've come up with a way to deal with it, they've patched it, and they've moved on. And after 20 years, you have a situation that's like that tangle of yarn, and you don't even know anymore when you're in the midst of the tangle which thread in that tangle of yarn belongs to which ball of yarn. And what we found in our clinic operation, our clinic operations were kind of the messy front door of the health department. That's where people walked in with their problems. That's where people walked in and needed immediate service or immediate help. And in the course of over 20 years of the staff really trying to meet that demand, they had Band-Aids on top of Band-Aids, patches on top of patches, and nobody could sit down and actually talk about what we do or why we do it. And every time they tried, really, and tried really hard, they'd still end up going around in circles and unable to really land on what they did. And so, in a moment of probably foolishness, I volunteered to try to use some of our staff and our techniques to try to dig in and see if we could help clarify the situation. And we started out with some fairly simple goals, that is, you know, well, let's identify and confirm priority outcomes. Let's analyze existing work processes. Let's try to refine and improve the work processes. The skills that we brought to the table to do this is people that were trained in how to do a business process analysis. They could do flowcharts. They could mine data to analyze workload, outcomes, staffing patterns. They'd had experience in implementing software systems and process redesign. They'd had project management experience, and they'd had reporting experience. So those were the skills that the team brought to the table. I'm going to kind of skip around a little bit, but the problem really was we had all these services that were going on, we had a lot of data, and we had people working really hard, but our actual total services were declining. So the harder that the staff worked in the front line didn't correlate with increasing the level of services. They were working harder and harder and not getting as far. So among the things that we did, and this is just an example, we went in and looked at all of the different kinds of work processes that they were doing, like childhood immunizations, and we analyzed them from a variety of workflow processes. What was the workload like over months? We even sat down with childhood immunizations and adult immunizations to find out if there were variations from the days of the week, you know, if that was a fluctuating kind of thing. We looked at all these processes. At that point in time, most of the services delivered by the clinic were on demand. And one of the problems with on demand is if you staff for the lowest level of demand, your public's going to have really long waiting lines and you're going to have really cranky people. If you staff for the highest demand, then you're going to have people sitting around not producing and costing money. So it's a very difficult kind of thing. So use some of these tools to try to get a sense of that. Another way of looking at it, we looked at STD. Well, the total number of STD visits were declining, but our outreach was working and we were bringing in the people at higher risk, so the positive results was increasing, which meant that while the numbers were declining, the workload was staying level or going up. So again, important information to begin to look at. We looked at calls. We do try to do some telephone triage and provide health information and other kinds of services over the phone. And, you know, we looked at what are the kinds of calls that we're getting at this point, and try to get a sense. And so one of our most important services, I think, but then it's my bias, is that we do the presumptive eligibility for Medicaid for pregnancy services. As a result, we see the majority of low-income pregnant women in our county, and we use that as kind of a one-stop shop to launch them into not only their first appointment for the physician, but by the time they leave, they're enrolled in WIC. They've got a referral to our dental clinic if they need screening for dental disease or dental services. And so at one appointment, they can. One of the difficulties was that when the clinic got really busy, you see that kind of drop in October and November, lo and behold, flu shots happen in October and November, and the lines outside the department get really long. And that one ended up coinciding with a drop in late entry to care. So one of the things that was happening is as the workload in the clinic shot up with flu shots, you started to see more pregnant women having a delay in entry to care in the first trimester because they weren't getting in and they weren't getting seen. And likely what was happening is they were coming in, and after a two-hour wait, deciding that it wasn't worth it, they'd go home and then come back later. And so one of the things we began to uncover were some patterns like that. What all of this helped us do was to begin to define some of the problems and some of the opportunities. One of the things that I didn't show you pictures, and I'm not sure, I may have them some later. We, amongst all of, besides doing that data mining, we also flowcharted out all the processes and looked at it. And at the time when we started, we had ended up with the forms that are being used in the clinic. We had three books that stacked up. These were all the forms that the clinic nurses and staff were trying to use to provide the services that they were trying to do. And again, a lot of that had developed for very good reasons over the years. So once we had all that information and we're trying to kind of sort it out, I was using some additional, I'd read some articles that I think it was the Harvard Business Review had in them that talked about drivers. And one of the things that really hit me about our public health clinic, it was just one of those epiphanies, is that we had two different kinds of questions here. The clinic wasn't in and of itself a service. It was a point of service delivery. Once I'd made that connection, being able to start talking to people about some of the things that drove the service became easier to articulate. The clinic is a point of service delivery. What drove each of the services were the department and the community's goals for access to care, the department and community's goals for maternal child health, their goals for chronic disease, and their goals for communicable disease. The programs themselves and the community objectives, the department objectives, were external to it. The clinic itself was a point of service delivery. It was a way in which to get synergy from sharing staff, sharing space, and things like that. What had happened is that link back to all of those programs wasn't being acknowledged, and for every single one of those programs, they were trying to handle that separately, and so there wasn't kind of a recognition that you really needed to look at it as a point of service delivery and start thinking about some different kinds of ways to approach it. The other is that we were working on, what drove the demand were these other larger program areas. What drove the services was, at that point, a kind of traditional public health, on-demand public health nursing model in an environment in which the services that were being delivered were not always most efficiently addressed by using that particular model or resource. And so the other model that we came up with is that we needed to look at each service on kind of a continuum of whether we used, and some of these terms that we put together had to do with the way we needed to be able to talk to our community about kind of how our conclusions were coming. But one of the continuums is there are times in which the public health nurse model is a really important one to use. There are times where a more medical clinic model that uses ancillary staff more fully becomes a more cost-effective model. The other dynamic of that is to really look at scheduled and on-demand services, because the advantage of scheduled services is that you can begin to define and control your workload, which has a lot to do with how many resources you have to put into something. Whereas when it's on demand, you're really at the mercy of what comes in time and place. But because we're public health, we're not ever going to get away completely from on demand. So we put together this model to begin. Now, the purpose of these two models in actuality wasn't to tell our staff what to do. It was to create the context in which they could sit down and have the discussions and make decisions. Because what had been happening is those discussions had been going like this for 10 years. What started to happen when we sat down with the staff and put this together is they started saying, okay, well, we're going to try this. So they started with presumptive eligibility. The nurse's first fear was, if it's not on demand, we're going to lose that mom that walks in the door. 6 months after making presumptive eligibility scheduled, our early entry to care improved by 25%. So it was one of those kind of experiments that was driven by the nurses themselves once we presented all the information. They went into that experiment of going from on-demand to scheduled with some apprehension. But in essence, in the end, they improved the level of service rather than decreasing it. We're still very much engaged in some of this, but one of the things that amazed me the most is that at the beginning of this summer, a couple of the nurses started talking about maybe we should schedule immunizations. And that's kind of, at least in our department, that's almost unheard of for people to start talking about that. But one of our hopes as we select an electronic medical record and have some scheduling options is that we can make use of something that's called open access scheduling that enables you to do schedule people on very short notice, but enables you to control the workflow, which has benefits to both the client or the family coming in for the immunizations and the staff. Because the family, when they come in, has shorter wait times, and the staff know what they're getting into. So these are just very quickly, and I'm not going to stop and go through them because I've already talked about them. But one of the things, this is kind of what our nurses on the phone were when people were walking in with access to care questions. Not excluding the wait time, which was probably up to an hour for many of them. They would go through all of this, go in and see the nurse, and end up, you know, with some, going home with some health information. One of the major transformations that we are going through is taking our access to care and turning it into enhanced telephone information and referral, because we can actually help the person move through to the point where they have the information that they need much more quickly by using resources that way. So part of what we did in flow charting everything out and then working with the staff is to help them understand and make decisions about where they want to bring things together and simplify them. So again, those are just some of the tools. The second example, and I'm going to be very quick about this, is local health departments are starting to talk about accreditation. And NACHO has been, the National Association of County and city health officers has been leading an effort for local health departments in the whole arena of doing accreditation. And our department was participating in one of NACHO's small grant programs this last year to start to look at what does that mean for our health department. One of the things that hit me as we started going through the templates and the forms to look at the performance standards and the performance measures is that, and putting together the information, is that illustrative evidence is kind of at the core of showing that you are can actually meet accreditation standards. And there are, I'm not going to get this number right, but I can't remember if it's 166 or 266 standards and indicators, so I'm not going to remember it exactly. They're all organized around the 10 essential services, and then within each essential service there are standards, and for each standard there is somewhere between 3 and 10 indicators. So when you add all the indicators together. So when you start looking at illustrative evidence, one of the things that quickly hit me is, you're going to use the same piece of illustrative evidence for 5 indicators in 3 different essential services. So it started to hit me that one of the things that needed to happen for us to manage that is we needed to be able to organize our thinking around, okay, what is the illustrative evidence? But we need to be able to connect it in 2 directions, connect it both to the indicator that we were trying to support, but then be able to create a catalog of illustrative evidence that could be connected from the evidence back to the various indicators that it needed to support. So one of our goals in the next year or so for my division is to basically create that catalog. And one of my standards is wherever possible on things like illustrative evidence, if you've got a custodian of that information in your department, in other words, one of them is credentials. Staff have appropriate credentials for what they're doing. And that's going to be an illustrative evidence required for, I think, about a dozen to 2 dozen of the indicators as you look through it. If we create a custodian of that information, say our personnel clerk, who is the custodian of that, then we would want to create a live link to the location in which she is saving that information, whether it's in a database, whether it's in a document, whether it's in a folder. So the idea about a catalog then would be create a live link so that you don't have to go out and update your illustrative evidence. The illustrative evidence is updated by whoever's the custodian of that information. So if you've got somebody whose job responsibility is to maintain that, you just create a link in your catalog to wherever it is that they maintain that. And so that's just kind of a principle to work with. That principle will probably carry us for maybe 50% of the illustrative evidence, but that means that when we get to the point where somebody's coming on site, that's 50% less work that we have to go through to gather the information together, because we've already created the links and it's going to be on hand. So what I'm trying to, I guess, describe are some ways in which you can utilize staff that you initially hire and have on hand to do the kinds of things that Mike and Marcus are talking about, but they can actually provide a much richer source of support for your whole department activities. And these are just, this is just very hard to read, but if you look at it, here's one standard. Here's some illustrative evidence that we decided went with this standard 1B, which is developing relationships with local providers. And then if you turn around, and look at it from the point of view of the illustrative evidence, say annual budget, those are all the standard indicators where you're going to want to be able to go back to your annual budget performance measures to tie them back to the standards. And so the catalog would kind of look like that. In conclusion, in public health, we all wear a lot of different hats. And your informaticians or your people doing informatics are no different. You know, you might have to be a data wizard one day. You might have to be Santa Claus giving people what they need to do their work another. Because I do the financial stuff, I'm frequently asked to pull rabbits out of the hat. You have to be able to build, you have to be able to research, and you have to go fishing a lot. So these are just some of the hats, but I think that's it just is very typical of public health.